from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. With student cheating scandals occurring across the country, has cheating become a cultural norm among students? More than 30 students were recently suspended from Berkeley High School for breaking into the school's attendance system and changing records. And a serious scandal involving stolen test answers occurred in March in San Jose. We begin the hour with a look at the Berkeley High scandal and what occurred there, and then we discuss student cheating more generally with David Callahan, author of The Cheating Culture. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Cheating scandals have occurred across the country. In fact, right here in San Jose, a scandal involving stolen test answers occurred back in March. And in 2009, a Common Sense media poll revealed that 35% of teens nationwide said they cheated with a cell phone, while half said they used the internet to cheat in school. In 2010, in another nationwide survey, two-thirds of high school students admitted to cheating in some form. In this hour, we want to take up the topic of student cheating, but first we want to brief you on what occurred last week at Berkeley High School. And we begin looking at what happened there because nearly three dozen students were suspended from Berkeley High last week for hacking into the school's attendance system. I want to welcome Pasquale Scuderi, who is the principal of Berkeley High School, who joins us by phone this morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And we'll also say good morning to Quan Tran, who is a senior, a student at Berkeley High, and chief of the service of the Associated Student Body at Berkeley High. And welcome, Quan Tran.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both here. And Principal Scuderi, let me begin with you. This was a password that was stolen and essentially sold off to, I guess, different bidders?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much our understanding of the situation after a fairly intensive investigation and a series of interviews. We know that a password, perhaps two passwords, were compromised, and that led to students making a variety of changes to their attendance records. We have some statements and some indication that students offered to make those changes for money, but we really haven't been able to confirm how much of it was done in exchange for cash and how much of it was done just as a favor.
Now, if people are listening to this wondering what is the big deal about absences, or tardiness for that matter, unexcused absences meant lower grades at one point. That's a policy that's been changed.
The policy has been changed because, like a lot of policies that you try to implement at a school of 3,200 kids and with a staff of nearly 200, implementing them consistently and with some measure of equity becomes difficult. That said, we've never moved off of the premise that teachers were more than welcome and, in fact, encouraged teachers to make attendance factor into grades by their own individual classroom policies. And obviously, I think this incident is going to make us sort of revisit that and try to get some commonalities in those policies. But unverified absences can lead to lower grades. They can affect your eligibility to participate in athletics. The state process that we're following now means that you frankly get a formal letter and a formal process begins after your third unverified absence. There are all those factors, and there's the age-old factor of not wanting mom or dad to see that you're not going to class.
Well, is there going to be prosecution?
You know, we've had this conversation with our partners at the Berkeley Police Department. Right now, I don't have any indication that we're going to move forward with a criminal case. There are two students involved that have been put up for expulsion, and that process, will begin shortly. It actually is underway now. But, you know, you mentioned that, and that's one of the things that we really hope to impress upon the students that were involved in that here at Berkeley High School, is that had this occurred in a setting or in a context other than at a high school, you'd be looking at dismissal from a job, a potential criminal charge, a whole host of consequences and negative impact that that you're a little bit shielded from because you're still in school and you're still a young person. That's not to say there shouldn't be a consequence, but the consequences certainly could be larger for students involved if they don't walk away from this with a lesson.
We're talking with Pasquale Scuderi, who is principal of Berkeley High School. And what kind of lesson at this point seems, in the works for you? I mean, was it a big surprise, or do you think that this is pervasive? I'm not talking about hacking so much. I'm just talking about cheating.
Yeah, I think it's something that schools are always going to have to deal with. This is a pervasive problem in everything from professional sports to high school campuses, people trying to get over with, less than the effort that's typically required. It's something that we deal with. I wouldn't say consistently, but it's not surprising to have a cheating issue in a classroom on a test or something like that. This is atypical. This most recent incident obviously is atypical because of the scope and scale of what we were dealing with. But the lesson we really want kids to wrestle with is that there is such a thing as ethics and integrity and being honest. And, frankly, wanting your attendance record or your grade record, your transcript, to reflect in the same way that kids that put in the hard work and show up every day do, that's cheating to us, and that's dishonest. And that's not tenable, and that's not something we're going to teach our students or encourage here.
Well, let's talk to one of your students, Quan Tran, with us, again, a student at Berkeley High, a senior and chief of service of the Associated Student Body at Berkeley High School. And Quan Tran, you think most students are doing their honest day's work, or is there a lot of navigating around in terms of what we're calling cheating here?
Yes, I do believe that most people are doing their honest work, and I think that's because I'm in AP classes, and the people around me really, really want to try hard on the test because it's just preparing them for the AP test, and if they do cheat, it's just going to come back and bite them.
What was the reaction to this hacking scandal among the students?
Mm-hmm. I was disappointed, of course, that my fellow schoolmates would do that, but at the same time, I was worried that this would give bad press to Berkeley High. And most often than not, things like this cover up the good things that Berkeley High school students try to do to help the community.
But you think that generally, even outside of the world of AP, and there was a scandal in San Jose that I mentioned, which involved, I believe, AP students, but you think that students are trying to at least follow the course of ethical action with respect to taking tests and doing all the sorts of things that are incumbent upon you?
Yes, I do. I do believe everybody tries their best, and it's just these few group of students who cheat that gives those people who try hard a bad name.
Okay, I hope you're right. I thank you for joining us. That's Quan Tran, who's a senior at Berkeley High, and I thank you, Pasquale Scuderi, who's principal of Berkeley High School.
Thanks very much.
Well, we're going to continue this discussion with David Callahan, who is here with us in studio, a senior fellow with Demos and author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well, and actually has a website with all kinds of fascinating articles that take us into different directions. First of all, about the San Jose case, because you're familiar with that.
Well, I don't think it's surprising that in both these cases, the students involved are so-called good students. They're hardworking, they're ambitious, they have big college aspirations. In the San Jose case, it was advanced placement tests that were involved. A lot of the good students, they're really, really worried about their GPA. They're really worried about those test scores. They know that every little fraction of advantage can count in this intense competition for college.
Especially with inflated grades.
They see the stakes as extremely high. The ability to get into a top school is, in fact, a big thing. I mean, there's a lot of graduate schools. There's a lot of corporations that only recruit from these top schools. So these students are not completely deluded about what's at stake here.
Well, there was a big scandal, which I know you're quite familiar with, about the SATs and impersonation. It was featured on 60 Minutes, a young man who actually probably took double-digit number of SATs and was paid quite handsomely for that.
That was a case in Great Neck, Long Island, which, as some listeners know, is a very affluent town in Long Island. The students there were not the AP top students, but were students with college aspirations who wanted to go to good schools, hired somebody to take the SATs for them, paid like $2,500. I mean, potentially some of their parents were the people who forked up the money. I mean, the parents are extremely anxious as well about their kids getting into the right colleges, and sometimes are okay about the cheating.
How rampant is it, though? Do we know? And particularly because there are a lot of gray areas. A lot of students will collaborate. They'll share notes. They'll use the internet, and they'll think, nothing wrong with this. I'm not copying off somebody's paper. I'm not having somebody write a paper for me. And so it gets into gray areas.
It is very rampant, and there's a lot of cheating that is not in any way a gray area of plagiarizing from the internet or, stealing or getting exam questions in advance or, the old crib, the crib note that you bring into the exam. According to studies, between 2/3 and 3/4 of high school and college students admit some form of cheating within the past year. That is a lot of cheating. I mean, we're talking a large majority of our students in high schools and colleges who are cheating, and it's up considerably in the past couple decades. And I think that really speaks to this intensifying anxiety about one's economic well-being and future success.
But does that include things like, copying homework or sharing notes, or are we talking about more blatant kinds of or more forms, using your smartphone or whatever?
Yeah, there's a range of these surveys ask students, have you taken a crib note into a test, or have you plagiarized from the internet, or have you gotten somebody else's homework? There's definitely a kind of scale of severity, but even the most serious kinds of cheating are very common in our schools today.
And yet not so common, it turns out, in distant learning, where you would think it would be much more available and much more impersonation and that sort of thing.
In fact, the rates of cheating in online distance learning are about similar to in-class, more traditional kinds of programs. There's been a couple of...
It seems counterintuitive, though. It would seem like it would be greater.
Right, yeah. You'd think, okay, somebody's sitting in front of a computer far away, they'll take all sorts of liberties. But there's been some good research on that and suggests that's not the case.
Well, there have also been good research on the type of students that that cheat. Of course, all students across the board, I mean, of all different varieties. And yet arrogance, for example, narcissism seem to be factors. There's less cheating for those who believe in God, I noticed, or fear of God, which is kind of fascinating. But
yeah.
What to do about it? I mean, you've been working on this for a number of years and have done a good deal of research yourself. Appeal to their fairness and their sense of justice is what we keep hearing needs to be done somehow. Appeal to their integrity.
There's a couple different levels to think about this problem. One set of solutions are not particularly rocket science. I mean, there's a lot of schools that just don't, pay much attention to this issue. They turn a blind eye. They don't have an honor code. Faculty don't really want to bust cheaters, So at some level, schools just need to get a lot more serious about this issue, put in more resources, have tougher punishments, no more slaps on the wrists. But the deeper level here is that this epidemic of cheating is driven by some economic factors, that the anxieties around competition, economic competition, success, and also by a culture which is very, me first oriented, strong individualism, strong focus on self-interest. So, you can do all the short-term fixes, but you're still going to be dealing with some of the deeper structural drivers of this cheating epidemic.
Well, if it is systemic, then we have to look at the culture, as you're suggesting. But students themselves give all kinds of reasons for cheating. Well, it was an opportunity. It's necessary because I have to get in the best school I can. I don't have enough time. There's too much pressure on me. There's just a wide range of sometimes just excuses and rationalizations that they use. But nevertheless, they all have at least some kinds of reasons.
For sure. There's all sorts of rationalizations out there. And one rationalization that you find is young people today are extremely cynical and have a kind of instrumentalist attitude towards education. There's a survey of high school students that's taken every 2 years. And one of the questions they ask is, Do you think that successful people have become successful by cheating? You know, do you think cheating is the way that people get to the top? And in the last 2010 survey, 43% of students said that, yes, successful people got there by cheating. You know, where do students get that idea by watching the news?
Well, you read articles about resumes and how padded they are and all that.
And you read articles about people on Wall Street who've made millions by cheating and have gotten, you know, away with no punishment, or Major League Baseball players. So students do not live in a vacuum. They live in a culture saturated with cheating. And there's a tremendous amount of cynicism about what it takes to be successful.
You also find they're cynical often about bad teachers. I mean, if they have a bad teacher, they'll say, well, why should I be ethical about this with this teacher who's so lousy? And that's a good rationalization from their perspective.
That is a rationalization, or that there's too much homework, that there's more work than they can possibly kind of keep up with. The thing is, though, there's always been those kinds of rationalizations. You know, students have always felt that the system is sort of a little stacked against them, or that there's bad teachers, or what have you. But in the past couple decades, we've seen cheating increase. So, you know, cheating has always been around. It's always with us. But we have to look at why there's been this uptick. And I don't think it's any coincidence that this increase is correlated with some changes in our economy and changes in our culture towards this kind of harsher dog-eat-dog kind of environment.
So what do you see in the way of remedy? I mean, a lot of people say, well, you got to teach ethics, you got to teach integrity and so forth. But, you're really talking about something far more enveloping than that, the economy, the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that at some fundamental level, the social contract in this country is broken. You know, I mean, what is a social contract all about? It's about the idea that people believe that if they play by the rules, they'll get ahead. They believe that the rules are fair and reflect their own interests. They believe that people who are caught all breaking the rules all get the same punishment. And, you know, that's the basis of a social contract. A lot of people don't believe that. People don't actually believe the rules are fair in this society. A lot of people know that those who break the rules get different kinds of punishments depending upon their economic status and whether they can hire good lawyers. So there's a tremendous sort of base level of cynicism that is driving this cheating culture. We have to deal with that. On the other hand, you know, there's a lot that can be done with better enforcement. And we've seen some successes in other sectors outside education, like Major League Baseball, right? So they finally have a tough drug testing policy and use of steroids.
I was amazed how easy it was for this young man in Great Neck to take those SATs. He had a piece of plastic. He just put his name and his date of birth, and he was in.
Right. And making a fake ID is not very hard. And
they do it all the time to drink, don't they?
Right. Right. And there's ways in which technology has really facilitated a lot of this cheating, both in school but in other sectors. You know, these cell phones, these smartphones that can be used to shoot around answers before exams, calculators that can be programmed with formulas, you know, that will help students to cheat and test. So technology definitely is a factor here, but technology can also be used to catch cheaters as well, and there's a lot of schools.
Well, if you have the right software, but there's so many paper mills out there. There are places, you know, you can go on the internet and they'll give you a bona fide A paper, and all you have to do is pay for it. I know there's a site that checks those, but
I was appalled to find a paper for sale about my book. You know, if you're ever assigned the cheating culture for a paper, you could go online and buy a paper, you know, with a nice essay about the cheating culture.
Well, how much of this cheating culture in schools is being driven by, actually, that's kind of an honorific thing if you think about it, in a counterintuitive way. But how much of this has to do with, do you think, or is driven by, as a catalyst, work level, because students do complain a lot about it, or all the fact that everything has been so geared toward testing? I mean, we've got the STARS test coming up now, in fact.
All the pressure, the new increasing intensity of school, the focus on these standardized tests, these are definitely factors. I mean, high school has become much more about jumping through hoops than in the past. And I think against the backdrop of that kind of very instrumentalist approach to education, very rigid, I think that there is more cheating. In contrast, if you have a kind of more of a liberal arts humanist approach to education, where it's all about mastering the material as an end in itself, it's about learning as an end in itself, people are less apt to cheat, because why are you going to cheat if the goal is on mastering material as opposed to if the goal is just on getting the right number so you can get into the right college, so you can get in the right graduate school, so you can make a lot of money. I mean, if that is sort of the orientation, it's no wonder a lot of people cheat.
Except you hear students often complaining about the fact that they have to learn a lot of useless stuff. And so that would presumably be, from a student's point of view, an incentive to, why should I learn all this useless stuff when I can, you know, copy it off or put it on my smartphone or whatever?
Right. Students certainly feel there's a fair amount of Mickey Mouse, you know, in classes that they feel like they shouldn't have to take. And college students feel that as well, that they're taking requirements that they're not particularly interested in. And research shows that students are more likely to cheat in those kind of required classes than in the subject matter that they're most deeply interested in.
If you just joined us, we're talking with David Callahan, who's here with us in studio, senior fellow with Demos and author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well. And it does get into some serious questions about culture, but also about economics. And I'm going to invite those of you listening to join us. In fact, you can do that now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls and your participation in the program, so you're cordially invited to join us by phone at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. Certainly like to hear from students and teachers as well, but all of you may have parents and citizens' thoughts about this and what it all bodes. You can also go to our Facebook page and join us that way. I'm looking at some emails here. Jerry says, as a former internal auditor, I'm amazed that there are not more simple controls in the system. For example, after grades are submitted, a hard copy could be sent back to the teacher for verification. After that, the file could be frozen and saved offline, with any changes requiring a hard copy authorization. Good point. Another listener writes, in the 90s, 85% of AP students cheated on tests, especially in advanced math, because it was easy to cheat over and over again. It's not the fault of the kids. It's the fault of crazy parents and a crazy competitive society. And on our website, one of our listeners posted this. We see the rich getting away with major crimes like creating the housing bubble through mortgage fraud, as the Wall Street banks did, or stealing $1 billion from their customers' accounts, which MF Global did with impunity thanks to Obama's and the SEC's complicity. And yet we act surprised that the kids think it's okay to break the rules. It pretty much dovetails with what you were saying.
Exactly.
And so, again, if we're looking for solutions, it doesn't necessarily it might help to have teachers and administrators stress more the importance of integrity and ethics and all of those good things. But we are talking about something that reaches down into our culture and has to do with just, well, the economy.
Well, I would also like to make a very important point about sort of the state of morality in America today, which is sometimes people look at these cases of young people cheating and say, well, that's evidence that morality writ large is going down the tubes. Young people have no morals today. You know, you hear that kind of complaint. And that's just nonsense because, in fact, young people on a number of different indicators are behaving more morally. The teenage pregnancy rate is at the lowest level in 60 years. The teen homicide rate has dropped precipitously over the past 15 years. The teen drunk driving deaths are down by 62% since 1982. Teens smoke less today. They drink less today. They use illicit drugs less today. They have less sex. Today's teenagers in many ways are a lot more socially prudent and responsible than they were, have been in the last 30 years, yet they cheat more to get ahead.
We'll continue this discussion with David Callahan, senior fellow with Demos and author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We spoke earlier with Pasquale Scuderi, the principal of Berkeley High School, and with Quan Tran, a student of Berkeley High, about the hacking scandal there. And we're talking about cheating in school with David Callahan, senior fellow with Demos and author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well. More than 30 students were suspended from Berkeley High for breaking into the school's attendance system and changing records. And We talked about that, and now we're talking more generally with David Callahan, who has actually studied cheating in not only the academy and in high schools and really schools from K through 12. I don't much cheating in kindergarten, but you know, once you get into the bigger grades, certainly. But there's a kind of ubiquity about this. I mean, banking, medicine, real estate. You know, you think about Wall Street, but you also think about people just cheating on their taxes and all that. I mean, that's pretty much your premise, isn't it, that it's pervasive?
You can't understand the cheating in a place like Berkeley High or in our schools without understanding the broader context, which is there's cheating in a lot of different sectors of our society. It's not just education. We also have a lot of cheating in business and Wall Street. We have corruption of our major professions, the medical profession with all the influx of pharmaceutical money and the conflicts of interest there. Lawyers famously having lots of ethical problems. Tax evasion is a huge problem. It's cost us $3 trillion in the last decade. Insurance fraud. I mean, the list kind of goes on. A copyright infringement. You know, I have a website with 35 different topic areas where you find lots of cheating. It is everywhere in our society today.
So it kind of trickles down to young people or filters down or rains down.
Right. Young people do not live in a vacuum. They read the newspaper. Probably not the newspaper, but
they read online.
They read Yahoo's front page or whatever. And they see what's going on out there. And it's pretty hard to follow the news today without seeing a cheating scandal almost every day. So we have Walmart now with this foreign bribery case. I just read today about a major construction company being fined huge tens of millions of dollars for overbilling government and private clients. I mean, it is everywhere.
Well, when you say it's everywhere, is it more pervasive here in the United States? Is there more cheating here than there are in other countries with all our traditions of individualism and the like?
We are better off than many other countries. You know, we are not Pakistan. We are not Brazil. But we are worse off than other countries, you know, such as some of the Western European countries. I mean, one way to think about this is that in the United States, there is a huge emphasis on financial success. This is a country where people tend to judge their self-worth by their net worth, right? It's a very materialistic country, and it's also a very individualistic country. High levels of individualism here. All of that set against the backdrop of, you know, a very harsh form of capitalism, more harsh than in what you find in Europe or Japan. And, you know, in that market system, there's incredible competition. I mean, it's almost socially Darwinistic in a way. People are very afraid of being losers. Meanwhile, the winners today, the economic winners of our society, are getting paid so much more than they ever have before. And it makes sense that, you know, when the carrots become a lot bigger, as they have been in this new gilded age of inequality, people will take more risks to get those carrots. They'll cut more corners. And I think that that helps explain some of the cheating that we've seen on Wall Street and in corporate America. The rewards are tremendous.
It's interesting you mentioned social Darwinism. Robert Reich was on with us yesterday, and he was saying that social Darwinism has been kind of used as an excuse by, reactionary or right-wing forces to explain the necessity for the free market and for all of the sorts of things. But are you making a distinction between, say, cheating and corruption? I mean, when you think about corruption, there are certainly countries that far exceed and overshadow it.
Oh, no question about it. And we also have less corruption than many countries. I sort of put aside the whole issue of political corruption, what's happening in our politics. I kind of bracket. We can talk about that, but it's a sort of a different phenomenon. And in many ways, we've improved there compared to, say, 60 or 70 years ago.
I was also struck by that McCabe study that I read on your website, that the most cheating in the college goes on in business followed by engineering.
Yeah. I don't think that that's surprising.
No,
It makes more sense that business students with a highly instrumentalist attitude who are focused on making money would cheat more than, say, you know, comparative literature students who are in there for the love of humanities and great books.
Actually, I had an incident. I'm a literature teacher and give these spot quizzes to see, are they reading? Are they paying attention? And a young woman came up to me and said, I copied two answers in the last quiz, so I shouldn't get credit for them. I found that kind of both disturbing and also kind of refreshing in a way.
You don't get a lot of students turning themselves in voluntarily for cheating.
I don't think so. Let me go to our callers, and we begin with you, John, from Alameda. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to speak to something Mr. Callahan said about cheating being endemic to our culture. I think that, I mean, I'm 31 years old now, but we got a lot of conflicting messages by authority figures starting in the home. My dad, I remember one quick anecdote is we went to an amusement park, and he would tell me all about how we shouldn't cheat, how we should be good people, how we should be moral, but that I should stay 20, 30 feet back from the entrance gate so that they couldn't see that I was too old to get the child discount. So that's just something that I see, like Mr. Callahan said, is endemic to our culture. And the interesting thing is that the people that kind of espouse the free market as being a solution to our problems are the ones that are in the next breath saying that morality is in decline in this country.
Well, I think John raises a really interesting point, which is about the role of the family and what messages are coming from parents. And I think that we've had a very narrow conversation in this country about morality, and parents have gotten a very narrow message about what they should talk to their children about when it comes to moral issues. You know, basically we've had a moral values conversation in this country dominated by social conservatives and the Christian right that have equated values with, you know, a set of social issues about sexuality, marriage, homosexuality, abortion, and drugs. I mean, so if you think about what parents have been told for the past 30 years, you know, talk to your kids about safe sex, talk to your kids about smoking, talk to your kids about drugs. You know, you haven't heard many messages, parents being encouraged, you know, talk to your kids about how all this economic competition can compromise their integrity. Talk to your kids about materialism. Talk to your kids about, you know, the kind of moral issues that arise from living in this kind of really harsh economic climate. It's just, it's not part of the discussion.
Let me thank you for the call, John. I want to get more of your calls on here. We'll go to Owen next. Owen, join us. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I was just going to call to ask Mr. Callahan if he could speak to the issue that I heard about possibly about 2 years ago where teachers were enabling their students to cheat on the STAR test because it affects their pay.
Owen puts his finger on a major new area of cheating that I'm covering in my website, which is teacher cheating. And we've had scandals all over the country of teachers.
Not teachers, but administrators who want to show higher test scores, right, and so forth. There have been a lot of that.
Administrators as well. You know, I think that this kind of cheating reflects the pressures that schools are under in these high-stakes testing regimes with all of these resources contingent upon, you know, hitting the high scores. And that reflects a broader trend in our society, which is more focus on numbers and sort of very narrow quantification of what success is. You see that trend in the corporate world and how employees are evaluated. You see it in the educational world in how schools and administrators and teachers are evaluated. And I think when you put people under those kinds of pressures, the quantification, the quotas, the hit the numbers, people are often tempted to cheat to make their life easier.
And I thank the caller, David Callahan, here with us, senior fellow with Demos and author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well. A listener named Tristan writes, I'm a scientist who received my PhD from Caltech. From my perspective as a student and now as a postdoc, I've observed a few things about cheating. In higher education, college and graduate school, I've heard many cases where faculty are reluctant to punish cheaters because of the energy needed to work through the academic bureaucracy. Also, the term cheating is quite broad. Getting answers to a test before taking it is cheating, but so is spreading rumors about a colleague or stealing someone else's ideas. And I frequently observed all these things in my career. Another listener, Becky, says, I think it's a combination of increased pressure on testing and increasingly meaningless tests, which makes the student think it is okay to cheat because they don't mean anything to them. And another listener named Tom says, this generation has grown up rationalizing free music downloads, etc. This cheating culture is endemic, distressing, and depressing. Web comment, went to college in Hawaii. where there is a large European population of the private colleges. They all made fun of me for not cheating. One Italian friend just copied an Italian thesis to English. I was told not cheating is an American value. Let me go to more of our callers, and we go to Oakland. Rob, join us.
Hi, thanks. I'm wondering if focusing on the individual cheaters is a little bit like the drug war, arresting the individual drug user. And what I mean by that is that there's sort of de facto cheating and then the cheating, legal cheating and moral cheating. So if we live in a culture, for example, I used to consult for venture capital companies, and these are companies that have laws written specifically for them so that they can avoid paying taxes. So they're not cheating, but they're not paying any taxes either. And that's really endemic, and I think that's become quite common knowledge now in the culture, especially since the 80s. So I agree that certainly the research is correct. More students are cheating, more people are cheating on their taxes, et cetera. But what about the people who are really doing wrong, doing in essence the same thing as cheating, but it's not called cheating. It's just called having friends in Congress, et cetera.
Rob, I think that you are getting at a really important point, one that I deal with in my book about sort of the narrow way in which we've focused enforcement and punitive powers in the society and the narrow ways in which we define personal responsibility. You know, we've had personal responsibility has been a mantra on the lips of every, you know, conservative politician for the past 30 years. But as it turns out, that personal responsibility is mainly focused on the people at the bottom of our society. So we have 2 million people in our prisons. We have this highly punitive, draconian drug war. But at the same, we have welfare reform. We have, you know, zero tolerance in our schools so that 5-year-olds are being led away in handcuffs. But at the same time, we have rolled back a lot of the oversight and enforcement focused on the top of our society, on the corporations, on the, you know, the people with the money and the power. I'll give you one example. During all the Silicon Valley in the 1990s, there was lots of reports of earnings fraud before, you know, Enron and WorldCom and all the rest. There was exactly one assistant U.S. attorney who was out here, who was in charge of like trying to keep abreast of all those cases. You know, we just have not allocated the enforcement powers to go after the cheaters at the top. And as you say, there's a lot of, you know, because of the lobbyists and the compromise of our political system with money, a lot of people, the powerful interests at the top can bend the rules. They don't even have to cheat. They can bend the rules to create loopholes to do what they want. And that creates tremendous arrogance as well.
Well, the way money works in politics, and it does work in politics, it's a form, as many have pointed out, and this is certainly not original for me, it's a form of bribery, really, and corruption. But how much of that really filters down, one has to ask too. I mean, if a student is thinking to – student go through a process, a mental process, thinking, well, these politicians are corrupt and they're taking money and so right. I can be corrupt and take answers.
I mean, well, this comes back to my broader point about the social contract. And, you know, the only way – you'll never have enough cops to – enough regulators, enough enforcement to stop people from cheating and look over everybody's shoulder. People have to not want to cheat. And the only way you get people to affirmatively not want to break the rules is by making them believe that the rules are in their interest and that they live in the same moral community as their fellow citizens. And a lot of people don't believe that. They feel that the rich and the powerful live by a different set of rules in a different moral community. And that creates, you know, if you don't think the rules are fair, what do? You make up your own rules. And so it's a formula for a moral free-for-all.
Yeah, I was thinking about that young man, Sam Ashigoff, I think his name is, from Great Neck, whom we alluded to before, who was featured on 60 Minutes and who essentially was a gun for hire. Brilliant kid, you know, going in and acing these SATs, 97%, 98%, and getting a few thousand bucks probably. Who knows, again, as you suggested, where that money was coming from. But what I was struck by was when a woman who was interviewing him for 60 Minutes said, "Don't you feel bad about maybe somebody taking a place of someone else in college who really worked hard and didn't have the kind of scores that?" Yeah. And he felt bad. He felt shameful. He felt, "I wouldn't do it again." But about that, he didn't feel bad. He said, "No, I helped somebody get in school who wouldn't have gotten in school." So
yeah,
the morality was kind of skewed in a strange way.
Yeah, that sounds skewed indeed.
Let me get another caller on here, and we go to Berkeley. Chris, join us.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to speak a little bit about my experience when I was in high school. I used to cheat quite a bit, although it didn't help me. I still performed very badly in high school. Bad enough that I actually tested out early because I knew I wasn't going to be able to graduate on time. But I did it because I really felt that even if I did the assignments, I wouldn't have actually learned anything, and I still feel that I didn't really learn anything in high school. And now I'm 25, and I have a master's degree, and I did very well in college, and I just think we should be asking the question, you know, is all work that we're giving to our students worthwhile, and do they view it that way, and if that has anything to do with the cheating.
Let me ask you something. You're fading in and out here, Chris, but did you get your master's degree in a legitimate way after you were a dropout?
I got it at San Francisco State, and I had almost a 4.0. And I did not cheat in graduate school.
Oh, that's really what the subtext what I was asking you. Yeah. Look.
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of kind of feeling by students that there's, you know, Mickey Mouse classes and you just have to do all this stuff to get into a good college. And, you know, that creates all these requirements, I think, are a formula for more cheating because they're not about mastery. As I said, I think when people are focused on mastery, when they're focused on learning for the right reasons and for its own sake, there's less cheating. When they're just focused on making grades and knocking off a bunch of requirements, there's more cheating, much more.
Here's a listener of Ashali who says, I also think another piece of this is our denial about being cheaters. The fact that we take the high ground when looking down at cultures like India and Pakistan where bribery is completely overt and we can claim moral superiority by keeping it covert. To me, it's the same old double standard the West has toward any other culture we do not understand. If we admit we are the same, just more invested in cover-ups, our whole culture is in question. Another caller on. Tim, that's you. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. First time. Caller, I purchased David's book, and thank you, Dave, for writing that book, back about 10 years ago. And talking about venture capitalists, I had a partner in a venture capitalist, and once we became successful, they wanted to change the rules and take more money than what was agreed. So I purchased his book to find out what was going on, and it was very illuminating to find out that he started his book by researching a class of 1957 graduates in an MBA program. And they all said that when they went to school, they were taught to give back to the community, and ethics classes were required. And I want him to talk about the comparison between what the 57 class had said and also about the highest wage earner in 1957 as compared to, I think it was the CEO of Disney when he wrote his book first.
And, you mean Michael Eisner?
Yeah. Tim, thank you for bringing up my earlier book. It is true. I wrote a book before the cheating culture. I wrote a book. It was actually the 1949 Harvard Business School class that I wrote a book about. And, you know, you're exactly right. The norms of those business people who came out into the post-war era and became CEOs, and they were very they ran a lot of big companies in their time. They worked on Wall Street. Their norms are very different than the CEOs of our time. You know, before this kind of greed is good ethos arrived in corporate America, there was much more of a sense that, hey, you went into business not to get rich overnight, not to have five homes and a private jet. You went into business to make stuff, you know, to create great products and companies and also there was an expectation that, you know, you shared the wealth with workers, you cared about the community in which you were in, and that...
A lot more emphasis on good citizenship and on serving the community. And it was true not only of CEOs, it was certainly true of bankers as
well. There was a sense of multiple stakeholders, right, that this was not just about boosting the stock price so that you could get that big compensation package. This was about sort of doing this broader good. You know, the term that's been used is equity norms, that the CEOs of, you know, I don't want to overplay this because there was a lot of problems in corporate America in earlier times, but you know, there was equity norms in corporate America. A lot of these 1949 class business school guys said they would have never dreamed of paying themselves the kind of compensation packages that today's CEOs pay themselves. And when Enron you know, because they would have thought it was sort of obscene and unfair. And when Enron erupted, you know, I asked these guys, what do you think went wrong? And they said that basically they thought that the values in business had changed and become a lot more focused on self-interest and the bottom line and more driven by shareholder pressures and a very different kind of culture.
And the philosophy that says we talked about this yesterday with Bob Reich, what the market will bear. I mean, people can't believe – I'm sure the class of 49 in Major League Baseball can't looks at the salaries that are being made by ballplayers now and has that same kind of stunned awe. And I mean awe in not the sense of venerating, but awe just in disbelief.
And speaking of those big salaries for baseball players, I don't think it's any coincidence that steroids came rushing into Major League Baseball at a time when those salaries were going through the roof. I mean, it makes more sense to take steroids if you can get paid $20 million a year, like Barry Bonds was being paid, than if you're just making $1 million a year, which was what Barry Bonds was paid back in the 1980s.
Let me go to more of your calls and join us, Caden. Good morning. I'm sorry, Donna. Good morning.
Yeah, hi there. Yeah, very many very good points have been made. I just wanted to add another point. One thing that has been happening lately is that the people who have tried to play by the rules and done, you know, tried to work hard, have, so often we've seen recently so many examples of them being badly treated by the system, being foreclosed upon, losing their jobs. So that's another aspect besides the ones who have cheated not getting punished. The ones who really tried to play by the rules have been the one that being punished themselves. So that's the point I wanted to make.
An important point, and we thank you for it. Good to hear from you. Let's hear from – this is Caden. Hi, Caden.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Fascinating show. I was struck by an earlier comment that students who feared God would be less likely to cheat. I want to clarify, I'm not religious myself. My father is a moral philosopher, and he doesn't think that you can have a moral code without God. And so I'm very curious to hear more from your speaker about the role of the decline of religion in the upsurge of cheating.
It is true that students with a theistic mindset are somewhat less likely to cheat. It's also true that some of the least corrupt societies on Earth with the lowest level of cheating are the most secular, and I'm talking specifically about those Scandinavian countries, which are consistently ranked as having lower cheating and corruption than other societies. I do want to go back to the listener who raised the issue about people who play by the rules and still get whacked, because I think that's a major issue here. It's not just that the winners are getting paid so much more, and that the carrots are so much bigger for the people at the top. It's also that the sticks are hitting harder for everybody else. And, you know, when you feel like you've played by the rules, when you've done everything right and things still haven't worked out, you've been slammed and nobody's there to catch you when you fall, that creates cynicism and creates anger, and it creates a moral license to feel like it's okay to cut corners and to cheat. And I think that one area where this plays out is in tax evasion. We could talk about that, but it also plays out in other areas as well, such as insurance fraud and some other places.
Well, again, a listener wants to know how things compare. What's the rate of cheating in other countries that are viewed as highly competitive, such as India, China, and Israel? Do we know?
Some of those societies, I mean, I think there's tremendous problems with cheating and corruption in China and in India, no question about it. As I said, I think we're better off than many societies in the world. I don't want to depict us as being like a real global laggard here.
We'll go to more of your calls, and let's go to Ron next. Ron, thanks for waiting. Join us, please.
Thank you. This has been one of the most interesting programs I've heard in some time about youth. My focus goes back to 1985 when we began in San Francisco the hopeandbeyond.org awareness service and learning projects. And that was headed by Judy Meyer. She was the president of the National Association of College Admissions Counselors, which enters people into college. And the program started with college-bound students all across the country with great emphasis in San Antonio. And we've changed that now to focus on those who aren't going to college, who want to get fair wage jobs, who aren't being focused on in the overall. Those needs are going downhill with dropouts, gangs. You know, when you leave school and there's nowhere else to go but a gang, that's a new family. That's a support system. We need greater support for those people who are not necessarily at this stage college bound, who may through their work effort become greater educated to advance in their work. That's the bottom line. In this whole issue, we have missed that focus.
Some thoughts from you, David Callahan.
Ron, I think you make an excellent point. And, you know, we've been talking mainly about cheating here, but there's also the issue of crime and people who turn to crime, who feel that society has betrayed them. They're at the bottom. They don't have opportunity. And we, as a society, for all this talk of personal responsibility, often make it harder for people to actually get ahead through hard work and by making sacrifices. You know, these low-income students who are willing to work full-time jobs and go to school on top of that, you know, what are we doing to them? We're cutting their aid. We're making it harder for them to lead productive lives where they do the right thing and get ahead. And that can lead not just to cheating when they're in school. It can lead to them ending up in gangs or in other kinds of criminal enterprises. So I think that you raise a really important issue there.
Thank you, Ron. What gives you hope in this whole picture, or what makes you slightly more optimistic rather than, well, dismal?
What gives me hope is that, you know, the United States historically has been a country with kind of a split personality. There's a very kind of individualistic, self-interested, rough-and-tumble side. But there's also a real kind of focus on the common good, on egalitarianism, you know, and a real strong reformist kind of bent in America. We're a nation of self-improvement freaks. And historically, we've kind of gone through these periods where there's excess and individualism kind of careens out of control, whether it's the robber baron era and with social Darwinism or the 1920s. But then that tends to be followed by, you know, reform and a focus on kind of doing better and living more by our egalitarian values. And so I think that I'm hoping we're heading into one of those reformist periods and we're going to push back against these excesses of the past 30 years.
Well, again, I want to mention your book, David Callahan's book, is The Cheating Culture, the new book, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Do Well. And you can actually go to his website, cheatingculture.com. He posts many recent cheating stories on there, and there's much to learn off that, and there's much that we learned here with you this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Thanks to also Pasquale Scuderi and to Quan Tran, and thanks to you, our listeners. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.